Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, the good news is that the number of divorces is actually in decline. Unfortunately, the bad news is it's in decline because the number of people getting married has gotten smaller. More young people under the age of 28 are living at home with their parents than are married today. Now, this doesn't mean that fewer are in intimate relationships and maybe they're living together. They're just not getting married. You put this up against the multi-billion dollar wedding industry, and it leaves me just a little bit confused because obviously somebody is having those weddings. So to help me, and maybe you too, make some sense out of all these numbers and talk about whether marriage really matters anymore, I'm joined by Bill Eddy. He's an attorney, therapist, and co-founder of the High Conflict Institute. Bill, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Leslie. Glad to be here talking about this.
Well, you wrote a recent piece called Marriage is Declining Rapidly, Does It Matter? And in that piece you state, like I talked before, that people are living together, they're just not getting married. And in this piece you talk about living together not being the same thing. So what exactly do you mean other than the piece of paper that we sign when we get married?
Well, it really is kind of a psychological frame of mind, and a lot has to do with commitment and how long people are going to be supporting each other, and really whether people are going to be a source of stability or a source of anxiety and change. And so now that we have these choices, a lot, you know, 30, 50 years ago, it wasn't easy to just live together.
No, then you were living in sin.
Right.
I actually, when I got married, my husband and I were engaged, and we actually had a wedding date set, but we were both moving across the country, and we didn't see any reason to rent two apartments for 6 months. And I was a real favorite of one of his aunts until we lived together. And then it was, did you know Steve and that woman are living together? It was like, Yeah. And that was 30 years ago. So, yeah, it's not been that long. Anyway, but continue.
Right.
I digress. Continue.
And it seems at first people are thinking of the freedom it provides. You know, you can decide, you know, we're going to move in together. We can just do this, and if it doesn't work out, we'll split up. So in a sense, it feels easier to get into and easier to get out of. And so what we have really, though, is an instability that people don't realize, the long-term economic effects and the long-term effects on kids, because even though people aren't getting married, they're still having kids.
Right, and they don't see that it's any different. They think they're making a commitment, but what's the difference in the level of commitment between moving in together, having children, possibly even buying a house together? I mean, that all sounds the same. So what makes marriage different?
Well, it seems to be this underlying willingness to work through problems, to kind of through thick and thin. And, of course, people kind of got tired of till death do us part for getting married, although people often still say that when they do get married. But the reality is a significant portion, although less than 50%. We talked for years about that it was 50%. Now we're getting closer to 40%. People that get married now tend to stay married more than in the past, but more people don't take that step. But it's the commitment and the psychological kind of approach. We're going to solve problems. Problems will come, but we can deal with these, and we will.
And what is it about marriage that makes that idea of staying through, work through the problems, why is that different than just say we love each other, we're going to work through these problems without going through the law and the legal ramifications of actually getting married?
Well, the research shows that people do split up much sooner if they're living together than if they get married. So while it may be kind of a frame of mind, like we intend to work things out, that in many ways it just doesn't happen that way in reality. People do separate a lot sooner. And in terms of thinking about children, when couples are married and they divorce, because this is a lot of what my work has been as a lawyer, therapist, and mediator, is that cohabiting couples break up at twice the rate of married couples in the U.S., and that research came out actually in 2005, which is about 10 years ago, and that about 40% of cohabiting couples have children. So we're, from my experience, I remember when I started as a family lawyer that the average age of children of divorce was about 8 years old, but the average age of unmarried parents, children of unmarried parents, was about 4 years old. So there's so many more years of instability, of change, of conflict for folks in reality who live together and have kids but don't have that kind of underlying commitment, which is also to society, not just to each other when you get married.
Right. But for right now, and we'll get there, but right now I want to stick with just the couple. And I have this theory, and it informs a lot of the work that I do with the couples, is that anything that keeps us separated prevents that idea that we're in this together, that we're a team in this together, as opposed to, I sort of liken marriage to being like a three-legged race, that you're connected to each other and you have to work together, but living together you're kind of two people running in the same direction, and I might veer off this way and you might veer off that way. And even though we may have a child together, we may have a house together, a lot of cohabiting couples keep their money separate. They kind of have it, and that's just one of the things that they keep separate, because I always pay attention to whether people use the pronoun yours or ours. And it seems that cohabiting couples, it stays in the yours and mine versus the ours. Do you find that, or am I just completely off base?
I think that that's very true. And actually, I'll mention a personal experience. So I lived with a woman for a while, and we kept all our money separate, et cetera, and then we split up. And then I met my wife, and we also lived together for about a year before we got married. And we were used to having this separate money and this separate mindset. We'd be out to dinner. How much do I owe you? How much do you owe me? And then, even though we were married, we still were used to having separate money. And I remember my wife saying, you know, it's just so complicated and it doesn't feel complete. You know, why don't we just put it all together? And I thought about, well, sure, let's try that. And it really felt different. So even being married, you can do things that make you feel too separate. So being married and sharing finances was a big step, and I believe it was a really good step, because we had to consciously talk about, are we going to spend money on this? Are we going to spend money on that? And one of the things is we still have our own little pots of money that we can spend frivolously. So I can have an extra ice cream cone, or she can buy an extra pair of shoes. But we're, by and large, we're together, and it feels better, and it seems to work better, because that's been 30 years we've been married now.
Well, and my husband and I were the same. I mean, neither one of us was very wealthy when we actually got married, so it made a lot of money. It made a lot of sense to pool our money. And there was none of this yours and mine, and you pay this half, and the electric bill is mine, that I see all the time. And to me, that really kind of sets up the mindset that you're talking about, that when we talk about our money or we check in with each other, because that's the other thing that happens is in cohabiting couples, they don't necessarily check in. Well, it's my life, it's my money, I'll go buy this, and you don't get any say in it. And while technically and factually that may be correct, from an emotional level, I think that's separating and isolating.
Right. I want to add a piece to this is in terms of providing support for each person to grow and to grow economically, to grow in one's career, that what we're seeing is people with college education are getting married. People without college education are mostly not getting married and a lot of cohabiting. And so they kind of freeze themselves in an economically a lesser state. And so in many ways, when you have this commitment, you can say, well, you go to school for these next couple years and I'll keep bringing in the family money because it's our money. And then I'll go to school and or get an extra skill or an extra degree. And so there seems to be a financial planning that comes for married couples, that cohabiting couples often, you know, and everything I see is cohabiting couples each want to get married someday, maybe not to this person, but it doesn't seem to, that day doesn't seem to come. And financially, that's a loss. People make significantly less without that. You know, college seems to be a dividing line. So you've got maybe, 66% more income, I think, if you've been to college than if you haven't. And so mm-hmm. I think people miss the financial benefit of planning together of a married couple.
Well, and I think that that's important. I think talking about going back to school and or going and maybe taking time out to have a child and raise the child, that when you're part of a team, you're making that decision together versus, well, I have to find a way to finance my own school, or I have to find a way to pay for daycare, or I have, you know, whatever that mindset is that creates, I think, actually more tension in a relationship, and that may be why cohabiting relationships don't last quite as long.
Yeah, well, I think it's when you get to some of those hard joint decisions, you don't push through, you may be more likely to give up. And I think part of that is, and I definitely want to talk about this, is the skills of communicating joint decisions, making proposals to each other, making requests, etc., that we seem to have weaker skills at that today, maybe because marriage is more equal and we don't have prototypes for today's marriage as much, but we need skills. People that learn these skills seem to be able to make these joint decisions better, communicate better, and get over the bumps that are going to come up in any relationship, whatever form it is.
Well, and as I tell people, and even though you're never supposed to modify the word unique, I talk about marriage as being a truly unique relationship in that it's kind of an amalgamation of every other possible relationship you're in. It's family, it's roommate, it's a business partner, it's a lover, and the skill sets that's required to negotiate all of those relationships simultaneously is a real challenge. And what I see a lot, and I think is part of the mindset, is this wanting to avoid conflict or wanting to believe that if you love me, there'll never be a bump in our relationship. Everything will be smooth sailing.
Right. And that's one of those myths that feeds, I think, relationship conflict, because once we have a disagreement, it's like, well, you weren't supposed to have this disagreement, you know, because of love. And love is not enough. You need love and skills for relationships. And that's, you know, we grow up with a culture that feeds the fantasies of, oh, you know, we're in love and all problems are solved, and then the movie ends.
And right, we go riding off into the sunset.
Yeah, And so what we're seeing is people aren't even thinking about learning these skills and aren't learning these skills. And yet relationships are much more equal now, potentially. And so people can just bail out if it doesn't go well because they've got another shot at another relationship. And that's where the skills help you stay together. I do a lot of divorce mediation. I practiced in family court as a family lawyer, before that as a therapist. And it's amazing what I see, especially in my divorce mediations, is people are making joint decisions about their children, about how they're dividing up their finances, much more than they did when they were together. And if they had learned how to do this before, maybe they would have been able to stay together.
So we should probably have them go through divorce mediation before they get married?
Well, I think a divorce mediation consultation before you get married, at least an hour, would be brilliant for people to do.
I know, we can't get them into premarital counseling, but so we'll get them into divorce counseling before. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on WebTalkRadio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with attorney and therapist Bill Eddy about the importance of marriage to children, society as a whole, the individuals, the whole packet. And Bill, you had said something earlier about that marriage is more than just about the two individuals. It's about society. And in the article you wrote that marriage does matter to society. Why? Why should I let... Isn't it between me and my partner, and why do the rest of you care, and what's that all about?
Well, it really, when you think about it economically and you think about it in terms of parenting, it really it adds to the stability of the environment we're all in. And so knowing, for example, if you've got a close group of friends, and let's say that's a dozen families, and suddenly one of the couples is splitting up, it disorganizes everybody. People are traumatized. People are upset. How could this happen? Did there something we can do? Can we save this? Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? Who do we blame?
Yeah.
All of that. So it's very destabilizing for communities as well as just for the family. And economically, people spend a huge amount on divorce.
Well, that's one of the things that cracks me up, because when people come to me, it's like, oh, I'm so expensive. And, you know, going to a therapist or a coach or something, that's so expensive. And my flip response that usually is going on in my head, I don't usually say it out loud, is, have you priced an attorney lately? I mean, they won't invest in their marriage, but they'll take time and money and emotion to end it.
Yes, and it's interesting because I've worn both hats. I was a therapist, including doing marriage therapy, family therapy, before I became a family lawyer. And I see that over and over again. As a family lawyer, I've told people, you know, if things are kind of shaky, why don't you go to some counseling? Really give it this last shot. Learn from the person you're with. Maybe you can make this work. And if you don't, you'll learn skills that will help in the future. But give it that your best shot now. And people say, oh, we can't afford it. And I'll say, well, do you know what it costs? I mean, you may pay $5,000 just to talk to a family lawyer, just to get in the door, because that's the retainer to take your case. And, you know, therapists never do that. I've never heard of a therapist taking a $5,000 retainer. Maybe it would be an incentive for people to stay in therapy.
Well, it might be. But, yeah, it seems to not make a whole lot of sense. And I know that there's somebody that you know who I've been a follower of Bill Doherty's ever since I started doing this work. And
oh, yeah.
He actually did a study where, you know, couples, they found that couples, even in the process of divorce, didn't necessarily want to be there. And it's kind of like, well, and I've asked, you know, all the time where people will say, well, we tried everything. And I'll say, well, did you go get some help? And they went, no. I said, well, then you didn't try everything.
Right.
But for some reason, you know, what I get is, and you talked about the community, you talked about the friends, and, you know, there's a lot of people who won't step in, and I get this, who don't know how to step in when they see friends or family members struggling, and suggest that maybe they go get help. They go talk to somebody like me, or they talk to somebody like you, or they go to, I know Bill Doherty's doing a couples mentoring program, where that's what the couples do, is they put themselves out there and say, hey, come talk to me if you guys are having trouble. And there's so much out there. Why is it that people don't know about it?
I think people are afraid to ask. People don't know about it. Bill Doherty, as you mentioned, I've seen him speak, and he developed a method of discernment counseling to decide, should we be trying to give this another shot, or should we stop and proceed with a divorce? Because you're right. I see a lot of people who are ambivalent, and it's interesting. I've seen this as a family lawyer and especially as a family mediator, where one person says, I don't want this divorce, and sometimes the other person says, absolutely, I'm getting out, it's definite, there's nothing left to discuss. And sometimes people say, well, you know, I just were so stuck. And I'll say, well, try couples counseling. And they'll say, well, we went once. And I'll say, no.
Yeah.
You go once. It just, the first time you go, it feels bad because you're talking about big, important subjects. But if you keep going, sometimes 6, 8, 10, 12 sessions, you find, hey, we've got some bumps here or some hurdles we can get over. And by learning some skills, and I even saw this in marriage when I was doing marriage counseling, people would say, I wish we had these skills before because we really do look like we're heading separate ways. And it's like, knowing the skills of relationships in modern times, and they're not what you see on TV. They're the opposite. We don't solve problems by yelling and screaming and storming out, but that's the role model that you see on TV and in the movies.
Well, and it actually may also be the role model that somebody experienced it at home, because in your article you point out that children aren't learning these skills because their parents don't have the skills. And it's this idea that, oh, well, we're in love and that's all we need. But as you said before, love is not sufficient, but falling in love is so easy. And usually the beginnings are relatively easy, and then it's when we hit that first bump or first several bumps, we don't know how to handle that. And for me, it's like, well, go learn. I mean, if I don't know how to drive a car, I'm going to go learn. People, I have to take continuing education credits to hold on to my license. People who want to further their career, they have to go learn something new. But somehow, we don't have to learn anything new because we're married.
Exactly. See, I think it should be taught in elementary school and high school how to be married, how to balance a checkbook together, how to do these kinds of things. Because the kids see the TV shows and the movies where everyone screams and splits up, and they don't see people having successful marriages. You know, I've been married for 30 years. I don't talk about that a lot. It's my story's not on TV. You've been married for quite a while too, and people don't see the successful stuff. They see the bad behavior, and for adults that's entertainment, but for kids it's training.
Well, but the children then see that as the way it's supposed to be.
Right.
And and I've said this before, and I repeat myself frequently, a good marriage is boring from the outside. It's not boring when you're in it, but there's no drama, there's none of this stuff that we see. And it's sort of like, well, but this is what it's supposed to look like. We're supposed to be storming out, or the alternative, we never disagree about anything.
Right, which is just as bad because you don't solve problems. And I see in divorce mediation, I see a lot of couples that don't hate each other. They just say, we drifted apart. Well, when did that start? Well, a year, 2 years, five years ago. Well, what'd you do? Well, we didn't do anything. And so you get the same message that it's okay to have disagreements. It's okay to disagree. In fact, the Gottmans, who do a lot of marriage research, say that healthy couples still have maybe 30% of the conflicts they had in the first year. They still have 7 years, 14 years, 21 years later. They've just learned to live with those conflicts, and they've resolved a lot of conflicts, but they don't resolve all the conflicts. They have outweigh the conflicts with good stuff. They say there's a 5-to-1 ratio of good stuff to negative stuff. But they still have negative stuff, and a lot of people today don't realize, oh, if you have negative stuff, you've got to get out. You don't have to get out. You just got to work on it.
Yeah, I can't remember where I heard this, but I heard somewhere that if two people agree on everything, one of them isn't necessary, which I this would appeal to my weird sense of humor. You know, right. So there's no way that no matter how much you love somebody, and that you're never going to disagree with them. But as you said, it's how do we disagree? Do we know which are the important things that we need to resolve and the ones that we can let go of? That, you know, my husband folds towels the way his mother taught him to. And I just unfold the towel and refold it because I just think it's ridiculous. You know, we don't fight about it. It's just when he folds the towels, he folds them his way. When I fold the towels, I fold them my way. And who cares?
Exactly.
But that could be something that people get their, you know, knickers in a knot over. But I want to ask one final question. It's like,
sure.
How do we help couples see the benefits of marriage when it has such a bad rep? How do we, I mean, you and I are having this conversation. This is what my show is about. I'm trying to get people to understand that marriage can work. It can be good. And how do we get these couples who are living together see that marriage isn't something to be afraid of?
I think we have to do a lot more public education, and of course your show is part of that. So you get kudos for doing this. I think we all, people in happy marriages, need to talk about it more. And I think we need, of course, in the media to have more examples. If 60% of marriages are staying together and people are happy after 30 years, as happy as they were when they got together, then let's understand that. Let's hear those stories. It's something people should be talking about, asking about. Say, hey, do you want to hear how this works? And I think that a lot of young adults are very curious about their parents' relationships, their grandparents' relationships, but uncomfortable asking. And so I think that's something that we should do. But I also think we need to promote the idea of skills more, and that this is part of growing up, part of what we need to learn, and that you can reach out, that there are resources. So part of it to me is the movies and TV need to present more than this, you know, drama. There needs to be the excitement of happy couples, and that just needs to be more part of our culture. So it's and also the other piece I want to say is there's some research that says that everybody wants to get married, and so I think we need to help couples who are living together know it's okay to take the plunge. You don't have to be financially secure before you get married, because as a team, you may become much more financially secure. So helping people take those risks rather than being afraid of them.
Well, and I think that's really important, because I think the statistic I've read is something like 90% of millennials say that they either actively want to get married or would seriously consider it. But I do think that they're scared by, as you so appropriately said earlier, this false 50% rate of divorce, which makes it just sound like flip a coin and, you know. But if you have the skills, if you are understanding of what marriage is. And one of the things that I think that people who've been married as many years as you and I have been is to be able to say, it hasn't been all sunshine and roses. There are difficult times. I mean, anybody who has been the parent of a newborn knows what a strain that can put on the relationship. So the early childhood years aren't necessarily fun. Sometimes the teenage years aren't so great either. But if you've got a partner who's got your back, who's helping you out, who's there, boy, does it make it a lot easier.
Absolutely. And I think then that the point you're making is an important one, is that having kids doesn't make life easier or doesn't make your bond stronger. Having kids tests the bond and pulls at it. And that's why I think married couples kind of work their way through that often during the first 2 or 3 years in ways that unmarried couples don't. And I'll tell you, nowadays I've been seeing more and more young couples, unmarried couples, just splitting up right away, that they're having kids from day one living in separate households. And it's very hard on an infant to have that kind. So I think marriage is part of the glue that helps people get through the first, like the terrible twos and all of that.
and the terrible 13s.
right.
So, Bill, thanks so much. Can you tell people where they can get more information about you and where they might be able to read the same article that I read?
Sure. I have a website. It's called highconflictinstitute.com, and we've got about 50 articles about relationships, about dealing with a high-conflict person, about dealing with ordinary relationships, how to make proposals, how to communicate with brief, informative, friendly, and firm emails and conversations. So there's a lot of information, books and articles there. But I also want to mention, in terms of skills, we have another website. It's New Ways for Families. That teaches methods of skills for people going through difficult times, including divorce, but the skills are also something that anyone can benefit from. We have an online co-parenting course that you can find through that website. So newwaysforfamilies.com and highconflictinstitute.com.
Terrific. And so, as I've said before, there are a couple of words that I never use in the same sentence as marriage, and miserable happens to be one of those words. The choice isn't simply to stay in a less than fulfilling marriage or to get out. It's to see if it can be better. And to be honest, most of us really have no idea what we're getting into when we get married, but we can find out. So contact me, contact Bill. You know, love dies because it's allowed to. And you need to take action, regular action, to keep yours alive. And if you're not doing it, the question that I have is, well, where do you think you're going to end up? So keep listening for more ways to find out how to keep your love alive. And until next week, stay loving.